Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Number one, I think we talk a lot about leadership in the home.
Ryan North on Focus on the Family Minute explaining why adoption and foster care can be an amazing journey.
And I think that there's a lot of stepping up that needs to be done. I work with a lot of dads and really encourage them. You have to step into that leadership role that the Lord called you to. And part of that is going, yes, I hear that. That's a good idea. We're going to do it instead of kicking it down the road like you suggested. And the other reason I think that societies that are the most prosperous are ones that are based on Christian ideals. This idea that we voluntarily self-sacrifice for the benefit of others. When you look throughout the world, those societies tend to flourish more than others.
More from Ryan North and his wife Kayla today on how helping children in need can be a meaningful experience. Stop by FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-5775. KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. Man, it's been quite a day today. Started out my husband and I cutting up a wild pig that we got last night, and then delivering bison boxes around the North County, and now here. So, back in the radio saddle. Today, my guest is my former colleague at the Washington Free Beacon. His name is Chuck Ross. I don't know if you know his byline, but you should. He's a great investigative reporter, and he has been on top of a simmering story that I think is going to play out more and more in our consciousness, particularly after the results of last week's election. And that is the rise to ubiquity of a group called the Council on American Islamic Relations, also known as CARE. This is a nonprofit with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and it has claimed more and more political power in the United States, but it's particularly powerful in California, where it's been a key player in the fight over ethnic studies, which, as you know, is now mandated for every public high schooler to take. And I've seen some of these ethnic studies curricula that have been adopted around the state in various districts. One of the craziest, there's a district in Southern California, well, it's the Santa Ana Unified School District. They just had to settle with a Jewish group because of the blatant anti-Semitism that was creeping into, well, it was just part of their ethnic studies curriculum. In speaking about Palestine, Israel, the entire complicated conflict that is. But one thing that Santa Ana did was they reconfigured most of their courses into an ethnic studies, through an ethnic studies lens. So this included art classes, English, Spanish, history. Not just one ethnic studies class that kids might have to grin and bear and just buckle down and deal with, but pretty much every course you're going to take, that you need to take, involved ethnic studies. And one of the it's been a while since I looked at the syllabi, but one of the syllabus items that I remember was, you know, obviously in all the Spanish classes and the history classes and the English classes, just really decrying European colonialism as complete evil, nothing good about it, no redemption. And yet, when they talked about the Islamic conquest of Spain, that was considered by the school district to be a golden period, a golden age of diversity and flourishing for the Iberian Peninsula. They didn't even call it Spain. And if any of you know the history of the Islamic conquest of Spain, it was extremely brutal, forced mass conversions, endless war. The few Christians had to hold out in a tiny corner, which they fought for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And the reconquest was truly a miracle, which led to a flourishing of European culture and also led to the discovery of the United States by Christopher Columbus and the bringing of Christianity here. So, yes, that's just a little tidbit of what has been happening now for years in the schools of California. And CARE is very influential in forging these curricula. So we'll be talking about that. And I do think I mentioned that it's a story that will be, you know, be rising more and more. You see in the UK, most of the big cities, including London, are run by Muslim mayors and increasingly Muslim majority councils, and entire cities of Britain are run according to Sharia law that is completely parallel to the law that the rest of Britain has to follow. And it's beginning to spread here. It's less noticeable because we are a much bigger country than the UK. It is not a tiny crammed island. So while we've had, you know, millions of people immigrating who are Muslim, and, you know, you do see an increasingly Islamic presence within our country, and a growing number of churches are turning into mosques, we haven't seen the kind of combustible conflict of civilizations that you're seeing in the UK. However, places like Michigan, where Dearborn's mayor, who is Muslim, told a Christian that he did not belong in Dearborn anymore and he needed to get out for objecting to a street being named for an Islamic terrorist, to portions of Texas, particularly Houston, following Sharia law. I think this is a story that is going to become very relevant. So anyway, we will see where it goes. Before we welcome Chuck to the program, though, I do want to talk about last Tuesday, leading up to the election, the special election where Prop 50 was on the ballot. I voiced quite a bit of frustration, as you probably remember if you were listening to this program. And my frustration turned out to be justified because, according to official tallies, 4 million Republicans did not cast a vote regarding Prop 50. 4 million Republicans. It would have easily been defeated if Republicans had turned out in numbers, and they did not turn out for in-person voting. If that was the solution to distrust over the mail-in ballot situation. And as a result, Governor Gavin Newsom is taking victory laps around the country. He seems to be everywhere where there's a camera these days, and he was even hosting presidential campaign rallies in Texas. He is already being seen as a bright, shiny object for Democrats. He was in, I forget where he was, but he was just speaking today. You know, obviously, there's so many problems in California, but one of the, you know, most obvious ones is the fact that the people who lost everything in the Palisades fire still have not had any questions answered. There is more and more evidence that the fire that destroyed their entire community was allowed to fester and burn and not addressed. And obviously, California officials have just repeatedly blamed the winds, but the winds were not picked up when the fire went out of control. The major reservoir that was built specifically to defend that area from fire was empty. There have been no answers about that. The Newsom administration has blocked release of any kind of public records, any kind of correspondence about the response of leadership. And I think it was today, Governor Newsom was just in front of the camera saying, "Oh, as you can see, my state is just at the front lines of the fight against climate change." And it's, you know, and you could see that from the Palisades fire. So actually using the Palisades fire as a political talking point for his agenda after severe mismanagement that led to the fires and then severe mismanagement of the fires themselves. So it is pretty frustrating. Just a little bit about what Prop 50 does. I am going to lift some of this from a column in the OC Register that was written by the conservative political consultant John Fleischman. He did a good analysis of Prop 50 in the wake of last week's election. And he says, well, Prop 50 does exactly what critics warned it would. It has now sidelined California's Independent Redistricting Commission for congressional seats until 2032. And it has substituted a set of partisan maps designed to flip five Republican-held districts into safe Democratic seats while shoring up Democrats in an equal number of competitive seats. So, in other words, Republicans could lose all of their congressional representation. And as he notes, this was just a sign that the messaging and the framing, the very misleading framing on the ballot, was very effective. Is that Californians overwhelmingly like the Independent Commission. A survey taken just last month by the Public Policy Institute of California, which is a, you know, very reputable polling institution in our state, found that 72% of voters said that it's mostly good that the redistricting authority was taken away from politicians and given to a citizens commission. As you probably all know, that happened in 2010. It was also done via a ballot initiative. And that view wins the majority of support across party lines and across regions and even across demographic groups. And it holds strong even among the people who voted for Prop 50. In fact, majorities of both the yes voters, 77% of the yes voters, in fact, and the no voters agreed that the commission has been a positive reform. And yet, Prop 50 passed overwhelmingly. So let's look at why. Well, not surprisingly, John's first take is the execution, which turned out to be, you know, very effective because the Democrats hold all the power for the messaging and how it went on the ballot. So once Newsom decided to chase this dream of rewriting the maps according to the most strong political advantage for the Democratic Party, all of the Democratic leadership across California went along with it, full support. They swept away all legislative obstacles. They pushed this through the legislature very quickly. When critics and opponents tried to challenge it in court, well, the state Supreme Court is pretty much all selected by Jerry Brown or Gavin Newsom. And so the state Supreme Court did not even consider those challenges, just dismissed them. And then we have the very, very powerful public and private employee unions and the very large businesses. I reviewed some of those last week. Major insurance companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield, that owe all their government, all their California business to government subsidies, or a significant portion of government subsidies. So they helped. They just gave some of that money back in the shape of campaign contributions to help Prop 50 pass. And then, you know, it costs taxpayers $300 million, but the politicians don't care when it is something that they want. So they didn't put up any kind of barriers or delay or problems for the special election based on the cost. There were just no safeguards that were allowed to slow down the momentum of Prop 50. Zero safeguards, because safeguards don't matter when you have a one-party state. And then there was the framing. So we talked about this in advance. It is up to the Democratic establishment of California to decide how this was framed on the ballot. We've seen when it's something they don't like remember the failed, it didn't even qualify. It was the ballot initiative to block boys from girls' sports and to restore single-sex restrooms, etc. And that was framed by the Attorney General's office as rolling back transgender rights. It was sold as a bigoted initiative from the get-go. Well, not so when it was something that they wanted. They sold it as this big symbolic blow against Donald Trump. And instead of it talking about the complex procedural questions that it involved, wiping away the independent commission for years and years and potentially forever, they said it was this defense of democracy. And, you know, sadly for a lot of the politically motivated people of California, yes, there are a lot of Trump supporters. I think Trump got more votes in California than any other state, but it is a massive state. And the Trump derangement syndrome among politically activated voters, particularly older boomers, I've noticed, is very, very real. You know, I see the protests in Cambria regularly, you know, calling Trump a fascist, et cetera, et cetera. And that kind of emotion really carried over thanks to the messaging around Prop 50. In fact, the No Kings protest, remember that? That was a very well-funded effort sold as a grassroots groundswell against Trump. Well, California Democrats really used that as a vote harvesting initiative for Prop 50. And then there was the funding. The Yes campaign raised over $170 million. That included millions from George Soros, millions from corporations. And as I said, you know, a lot of the corporations that do business here, health insurance companies, Blue Shield, and others, tech companies, sign checks. And of course, the opposition funding just never really got off the ground. you know, you need a lot of funding to crush messaging. I was hearing pro Prop 50 ads everywhere on every podcast I listened to, including conservative podcasts. It was everywhere. And then they brought Obama in. He filmed some television ads. I saw those wherever I was, where there was a television on. We don't have a television at home, but they were running frequently. If I could see them, you know, three times when I went out to pizza, three times that ad came on. So just think of the media spending. The opposition just did not have any kind of money to counter that. And then there was just, you know, the problem that's been here forever of the national Republicans just kind of shrugging off California. Trump didn't come out. What I heard on that was a decision by party leaders here in the state because of the Trump derangement syndrome. But I do think that really hurt motivation for a lot of Republican voters because, as I said, Trump did have a lot of voters, a lot of independent voters here in California in 2024. And if you remember, 2024 was supposed to be a little better for Republicans in California in the congressional races. I know this because I was following. And most of the races that were considered very close and could easily go Republican went Democrat simply because so many people only filled out the field for president voting for Trump and did not bother about going down ballot. So that was an issue too. So there are lots of takeaways, but the main one is if Republicans, if conservatives in California really want change, they have to at least vote. If you can't even vote, what else? What else can be hoped for? So anyway, we are going to break now for some messages for our sponsors, and then we will be back to discuss care with my former colleague, Chuck Ross. Don't go anywhere.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Speaker Mike Johnson is telling the House to return to Capitol Hill after eight Senate Democrats broke with their party and worked with the GOP on a deal to end the government shutdown. Fox's David Spunt is in Washington.
It includes spending through to keep the government running until the end of January. It funds SNAP benefits. Federal workers will get back pay.
For alert, federal workers have not been getting a paycheck during the shutdown. The deal would have to get approval from both chambers of Congress before going to President Trump. Millions of Americans getting hit with an early season snowstorm, burying communities along the Great Lakes, including Chicago.
So overnight tonight into tomorrow, that band's going to work from here into northwest PA, southwest New York State, like Chautauqua County, those areas.
Fox Weather's Mike Seidel in Madison, Ohio, as that system pushes east. America's listening to Fox News.
Welcome to the All-Star Moments of Freedom. Now, if your happy place is somewhere you unwind with a cold drink, delicious food, and sports on more LED screens than you can shake a remote at, well, then the sports bar at Chumash is your new escape. Doesn't matter if you're cheering on your favorite team or just enjoying the vibe. It's game on, friend. And hey, welcome to freedom. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and joining me now is my former colleague, Chuck Ross. How are you, Chuck? I almost called you Ross.
Hey, good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. So I did a little bit of an intro about our topic today, which is CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations. But let's start with just kind of the big picture of who they are, because I don't think a lot of people have heard of them. They're not a household name. Who are they? When did they start coming into American politics? And where did their funding come from? When did this kind of start?
Yeah, so they are a very interesting group. They've been around for quite a while, a little over 30 years now. 1994 is when they were formally launched. And so it was a small group of Muslim activists who had come to America, and they had started with through a lot of different groups that were affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, you know, a pretty prominent, very prominent organization in the Muslim world. In the Middle East, they've been, they're a fundamentalist Islamist group. You know, they're very large, so there are different facets to it, but there are quite a few radical elements within the Muslim Brotherhood. And one of their subunits is turned into Hamas. So CARE has various different ties to Hamas. Some of their personnel over the years have either been involved in Hamas front groups or, you know, been part of organizations that have helped fund Hamas. Others have been, the head of it now is named Nihad Awad. He was a spokesman for a group affiliated with Hamas. It's a very broad network. The general picture is that this group is, for all intents and purposes, pro-Hamas. They echo what Hamas rhetoric. They're as anti-Israel as Hamas is. So they started out, you know, like most groups do, they started out small and they've just grown over the years. And they became, I wouldn't say a household name, but really in the news after 9/11 during a Hamas terrorism fundraising case. And they were named an unindicted co-conspirator in this organization, in this investigation. Stop me if I need to. If I'm throwing too much.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I actually only found out about this today when I was prepping for the show, and I thought I knew more about them. So yeah, I think this is important. This case.
Yeah, and so I guess to kind of break it up, you know, over the years, so they started out small, like most groups do. They grew. They worked through various mosques and masjids across the country. They formed different offices in California and Washington, D.C. and throughout the country. They've grown and grown and grown. After they were named an unindicted co-conspirator is in 2008, they definitely had their reputation tarnished by this. You know, that's a bad label. And what they did was, you know, their involvement cast a shadow on them. But they, over the past, through the Obama years, they repaired their image quite a bit. They were a little more low-key, though. They worked on a lot of legal, you know, they filed lawsuits on behalf of clients alleging Islamophobia, stuff like that. And so through the Obama years, they coasted. They made friends with a lot of Democratic politicians. If you go on CARE's website right now, there are about 150. They have, you know, letters of praise from about 150 different politicians. Nancy Pelosi's on there. Plenty of other California people are on there, of course. You know, singing the praises of CARE, calling them a wonderful Muslim civil rights organization that does all this great work. You know, despite their history of links to Hamas and support for Hamas.
Hmm. Did Obama have any particular ties to them which helped them rehabilitate their image?
I mean, I wouldn't say he had ties to them. He never, CARE officials would here and there come to the Obama White House, although the George W. Bush White House also had CARE people come through and visit and stuff like this. That was an era when, you know, a lot of the Muslim and Islamic groups were, you know, they were trying to distance themselves from 9/11 and Al-Qaeda. They didn't want, you know, they of course were downplaying terrorism or saying that terrorism was wrong, and they were doing a lot of interfaith outreach and stuff like that.
Right, and the tagline at that time, I remember very clearly because I was in college, was Islam is a religion of peace. I remember George Bush repeating that. Right. Repeatedly.
Yeah. And a lot of the, yes. And yeah, so they were making political inroads in that, in the Bush administration, and all, and that carried through to the Obama administration. Even after, you know, there were a couple of years after they were named unindicted co-conspirators that I think people were kind of took an arm's length approach to them, but they, over the next, you know, the latter half of Obama's presidency, they kind of got back in and their footing back in the White House, Capitol Hill politics. Yeah, they've been a ever omnipresent force since then, and they've only grown in the aftermath of October 7th. They really, as have many other groups now, as you've seen, you know, they've become bigger, more prominent in the news and been more active.
And more vocal. More vocal, yes. How did you as a reporter get interested in this group? Because when we worked together at the Free Beacon, you were really on top of them. And, you know, before I worked at the Beacon, I wasn't really familiar with them at all. I didn't pay much attention, didn't see them as a particularly significant political group. And you really changed my mind about that. When did you start covering them? And what were some of the early big stories and findings that you, that captured your attention?
In my own journalism career, I guess I've been at it for about 10 years. I can't remember the first time I guess I've always kind of just heard the name here. I mean, I guess during the Obama years, there were quite a few stories, and I can't remember the people involved, but, you know, you'd hear of a guy who, you know, preached for jihad, who would, like, had done a photo op with Obama or something, or there's a guy in Virginia. He's not necessarily affiliated with CARE, although the other part of this thing, you know, there's CARE. There are other groups like the Islamic Circle of North America, Islamic Society of North America, Muslim American Society, all these names, a bunch of acronyms. They all work. They're all very close together. They all work hand in glove together, and they all coordinate to a degree on their protests and everything like that. So a lot of these people kind of float in and out of the same organizations. So that being said, I can't necessarily remember exactly when I wrote about a CARE official, but over the years, they just pop up and they'll jump in the middle of a situation and say something, you know, extreme. I mean, and that just has gone into overdrive after October 7th. And my, you know, my colleague, Adam Credo, Alana Goodman, other people at the Free Beacon have written a ton of stories on CARE as well, you know. And so the big one was who I mentioned earlier, Nihad Awad, who is the executive director of CARE. In November of 2023, he gave this speech where he said he was happy to see Hamas attack Israel on October 7th. He said other things justifying, you know, everyone kind of knew that CARE was fine with the attack. But right. You know, for him to directly verbalize it kind of just told you everything we already knew, but that they wouldn't say. So since then, I think at the Free Beacon and other outlets, you know, you keep an eye on what CARE's doing and who they're meeting with and who's willing to meet with them, because, you know, there are still plenty of Republicans won't meet with them or give them any platform. A lot of Democrats have stopped, but there still are some. And so those that do, it's interesting to see, you know, who they are and what positions they have on Capitol Hill. There's Andre Carson, the congressman in Indiana, who he's Muslim. He's had relationship with CARE for years and years. He sits on the House Intelligence Committee. You know, mm-hmm. He was at a CARE event in September where he took the stage and he said, "I love CARE," and is, you know, accusing all their detractors of Islamophobia and such. So they still do have some very powerful allies, and they're working their way to develop more political power. And, you know, unfortunately, in my opinion, after October 7th, besides the devastation of the attack itself, a lot of these organizations like CARE have, you know, generated a lot of support, a lot of money.
A lot of money, yes.
For the cause. Yeah. And they're using that to to get more like-minded individuals elected in office and to, you know, influence how they vote on certain things and the positions they take.
So you mentioned that several California politicians, including Nancy Pelosi, have praised CARE, and that is highlighted on CARE's materials. Is there anything, and you mentioned that there had been, that there was kind of an early early kind of foothold in California. What about their work in California is kind of unique nationally, and how do they work here?
So I would say that they have a national, they have CARE's national headquarters in D.C., but I think the two California offices are actually the most powerful, or like they're the most active. There's the one in the Bay Area, and then there's one in Los Angeles. And I use both of them as kind of like proving grounds for certain initiatives that they want to take. Like last year in the Los Angeles office, they launched a Muslim community engagement network, which is kind of, they're hoping they'll use that as like a model across the country to rally canvassers for certain politicians that they support, get out the vote efforts, things like that. And if they can, you know, make it work in Los Angeles or, you know, San Francisco, they can do that over in Atlanta, Columbus, Ohio, Oklahoma City, wherever they choose to, you know, elect. And they've, you know, they've gotten involved more at the local level over the years, over the last 2 years, school board elections, municipal elections, and things like that. But the two California offices there that I mentioned are definitely their most powerful, most visible. In the Bay Area, there's the head of that office is named Zahra Ballou, who is very vocal, very anti-Israel, says a ton of inflammatory things, but she's very powerful as well in the Muslim community. So Los Angeles chapter as well. If you review all their events and if you go down that rabbit hole, you'll see her name pop up and you'll see the guy in Los Angeles pop up as well, giving speeches all across the country, going to all the major rallies where not only the supporters are, but also the donors, the people with money who are giving money to the organization.
One thing that was interesting in doing a little researching is they're very adamant about calling the Muslim Brotherhood moderate and seeking to just kind of burnish the Muslim Brotherhood's image. They say that, oh, they're not considered at all. They're actually despised in the Middle East for not being extreme enough. And I just was thinking, just after I graduated college in 2005, I was working for a Coptic Christian magazine in Egypt, in Cairo, and there was a lot of fear of the Muslim Brotherhood because rumblings, this was prior to the Arab Spring, obviously, Mubarak was still in charge, but there was a lot of rumbling that the Muslim Brotherhood was gaining a foothold, and there was fear that there was going to be unrest, and that whatever unrest happened would be bad for particularly the Egyptian Christians, who are a very ancient church, obviously established at the very, very beginning of Christianity, and were kind of protected by Mubarak. They were treated as second-class citizens, but they weren't allowed to be killed. And that kind of went out the window after the Arab Spring. That protection was lifted. But I remember one man telling me, because Condoleezza Rice at the time was pressuring Egypt for democratic elections, and he said, "Please, if you can spread any message back home, it's do not push democratic elections here because the Muslim Brotherhood will win, and it will be very bad news for us." And so the idea that the Muslim Brotherhood is just how CARE frames the Muslim Brotherhood is very different from what I saw on the ground, obviously a long time ago now, 20 years ago now, but. Yeah. but fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, maybe there is a faction. I'm sure there is a faction somewhere, in, you know, in Egypt and elsewhere that where that is more extreme than Muslim Brotherhood. But Muslim Brotherhood is probably the biggest for their size, and then also having Islamist ideology. I mean, they want to instill Islam wherever they are.
Yes.
And
with on know, that note, we do have to break for a quick ad, quick messages from our sponsors, but we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We are speaking with Chuck Ross from the Free Beacon. You're listening to Free Talk California. Stay with us.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. Stocks kicking off the new trading week higher following signs of progress to end a record government shutdown. The artificial intelligence stock trade came roaring back today with shares of NVIDIA and AMD leading the charge. AI stocks tumbled last week on inflated valuation worries. Gold prices hitting their highest level in 2 weeks and climbing to $4,100 a troy ounce. Palantir Technologies shareholders are looking to put last week in the rearview mirror. Shares of the data analytics software company rose over 9% today. Its stock tumbled over 11% last week on valuation concerns. The Dow winners, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow decliners, United Health, Procter & Gamble, and Home Depot. The Dow rising 382 points. The Nasdaq higher by 523. S&P 500 up 104. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm Alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finish work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and I'm joined by Chuck Ross, reporter for the Washington Free Beacon. We are discussing CARE, the pro-Islamist group, political group in the United States, which has been around for about 30 years, but has grown increasingly in political power and money since October 7th. The terrorist attack on Israel. So I want to bring up the election of Zoram Mamdani in New York, and he kind of ran a campaign that was very it was very parallel with some of CARE's messaging. Any questioning of any of his rhetoric, which has been quite radical about Israel and the United States in general as Islamophobic. Is this CARE's kind of first big high profile win? How have they been working on the political front in elections over the last few years, and what's that looking like?
And we actually, I mentioned to you the other day how I meant to have a story out today on this, but it's coming hopefully this week that'll kind of go into in the wake of October 7th, how their political operation, they took a new leap in the political operation to start endorsing candidates, using super PACs to get money to candidates. And so far, Mamdani is one of the biggest spend so far that they've had. And they've spent money on behalf of Derek Tran down in Orange County. That hasn't really been covered much, but that our story will focus on that. Other candidates here and there, they're still in the early stages of kind of building this out. But for Mamdani, they use a super PAC that they formed last year, and they spent $143,000. They sent that money to another PAC that supported Mamdani called New Yorkers for Lower Costs. But the name is a misnomer because it's basically, it's funded by the CARE PAC, and then a lot of other donors are Muslim. They are interested in the issue of Palestine and Israel. They're probably also interested in lower costs in New York, but that's not their main focus. They gave money because they like Mamdani's policies, anti-Israel policies. So this organization was the largest PAC supporting Mamdani. You know, and it's hard to say what, if that pushed Mamdani over the line or if you'd have won or lost without it. I mean, it certainly, of course, helped. They spent $3 million to help him. But, I mean, Mamdani was also running against Andrew Cuomo and, you know, some other bad candidates. But that's neither here nor there. But this was CARE's first, the biggest spin they've had so far in this new era of their organization. The new era being not only their charitable arm, which is like I mentioned earlier, files lawsuits and is involved in, you know, education, quote unquote, that's their tax exempt status. And also voter registration drives. They can do that as a tax exempt charity. This new era involves a political lobbying arm and also the super PAC. So they're merging all those units together to just be like a supercharged, you know, and they're not the only people. They're not the only group who does this. You know, a lot of organizations do this. They have a charity, a super PAC, It's just interesting, given to me CARE's extreme inflammatory anti-Israel rhetoric, that they're doing this in order to essentially, and they said it, to influence the people they get elected. Mamdani probably doesn't need any influencing from CARE, as you said. You know, they're already in line. They're already in line with each other here.
Right.
So for Mamdani, it's like they just want to get a guy that agrees with them in office. But they are starting to get into other races where the nominee, and I think this is the case down in Southern California with Derek Tran, where this guy probably doesn't have too many strong opinions on Israel and Gaza. But if there's enough CARE money or money from the community backing him, he may, you know, take a vote here and there to that they like. So, yeah, it's still in its early stages, but the Mamdani race is the biggest one to look at so far for CARE.
You mentioned that, you know, they're already in line. There's an activist named Linda Sarsour who's pretty far left. I knew who she was because of the Women's March. I don't remember if she's still part of that, but she kind of made waves last week when video emerged saying that she would make sure that she, you know, she's talking about CARE support for Mamdani and making sure that he followed through with what they wanted. What would that look like in New York?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, that kind of, and that gets to a question that was asked during the campaign. What exactly, you know, so Mamdani said he would arrest Netanyahu if he was in New York City, which will never happen. But a lot of the stuff, you know, that I mean, I guess one thing that could actually happen on the ground in New York, and it fits into just Mamdani's overall view of policing and, you know, I don't know if there, you could imagine a scenario where a Jewish person is attacked on the street, and maybe Mamdani isn't as, I don't know, maybe puts out, makes statements that, that distort the case or something like that, or makes inflammatory, or if you can imagine any scenario where his views on the situation in the Middle East could cloud his judgment on day-to-day issues there. I mean, I don't think that he's going to be able to or would, you know, start doing anything drastic right out of the bat. But I think that you might just see rhetoric that is more anti-Israel. Who knows where that can lead in this day and age where people use rhetoric, you know, to engage in political violence. Maybe they feel emboldened to do things, attack people. I don't know, or, you know, just hold more rallies in New York City with Hamas flags, which I guess that's certain people, that's their First Amendment rights to do things like that, but it's also not, I don't know, it's not something that most Americans agree with or want out on American streets. I don't, you know, and CARE and these groups will, of course, have their own policy agenda that they would like to see Mamdani pass through. Speaking of Lassar Sword, just I'll plug my colleague's work. Alana Goodman did a story on how the New York City has given $3+ million to Linda Sarsour's nonprofit from 2017 to 2024. She's actually not affiliated with the nonprofit anymore, but you know, some of the people she put in place is still affiliated with this group, and they're very anti-Israel. They've gotten millions of dollars in city money, and the question is, you know, will Mamdani's administration continue funding that? And I would guess they will, and we could see more money flow to organizations like that. At the Free Beacon, we recently wrote about an organization called the Muslim American Society, which has chapters all throughout the five boroughs of New York. One in particular in Brooklyn and Staten Island is very, very extremist, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas. They've received a couple $100,000 towards youth programs, the city money towards funding youth programs and after-school programs. They have, as we reported, they want to basically set up chapters in every public school in New York City. And so if the Mamdani administration wants to throw more money at that, that would just make that happen more. And so then you would get radical extremism just in the city schools. So, I mean, there are any number of things you can think of budget-wise that I guess Mamdani could allow to happen or throw more money towards.
We only have a minute left, yeah. But do you think that CARE's agenda has grown more ambitious recently? What would you say it is for the United States? Obviously, they don't want Israel to exist. What about their goals for the United States?
I think their immediate goals are just to elect more either Muslim candidates or anti-Israel candidates, people they agree with. There's people talk about enacting Sharia law and all these things. I mean, some of the Muslim Brotherhood elements of CARE and these groups may look for those things down the road, but they have to get enough political power. But I think the next 5-10 years, they just want to get more Muslims in office. And their leaders have said that before. They would like to have 30 Muslims in the House. I think there are 4 now. So they want to have 30, which they say is on, would be the ratio of what of the American population. So that's their goal for now. And just strengthen our political power.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. But thanks so much, Chuck, for coming on. Thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week and every Monday at 1 o'clock here on KPRL. You are listening to Free Talk California. Take care, everyone.
Free Talk. Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's